From the Watson Institute at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Sarah Baldwin. On this episode, something we're not getting a lot of these days, a story that might actually raise your spirits. Mohammed Malim is the founder of Epimonia, a Minnesota-based apparel company that's dedicated to helping refugees. 50% of their proceeds go to charities supporting refugees, and they employ recent refugees in their factory. Even their products raise awareness of and compassion for the cause. Their iconic accessory is a bracelet made out of life jackets that were worn by refugees crossing into Greece. It's social entrepreneurship in every sense of the word. Mohammed himself is also a refugee, and his story is inextricably linked to that of Epimonia. On this episode, he talks about his business, his story, and the importance of challenging certain narratives surrounding refugees in America. This episode is the second in a series we're producing with Watson's Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies. And once again, I'm happy to welcome back Dr. Pablo Rodriguez as our guest host for this special series. Here's Dr. Rodriguez.
From the Watson Institute, this is Trending Globally. I'm Dr. Pablo Rodriguez. Many of us living in America, the land of the free and home of the brave, have probably never experienced the challenges and trauma that stem from the disaster of a civil war. We often find ourselves trying to understand, but are not fully able to comprehend the refugee experience. But I have lived this life, and I'm grateful for the lessons it has taught me as a Somali American. These are the words of our guest today, Mohammed Malim. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Before we talk about Epimonia, which is the company that you have founded, and the transformative effect of those involved, tell me a little bit more about your own story as a refugee.
Yes. So I was born in Kenya, one of the refugee camps in Kenya. My parents fled from the civil war back in Somalia during the 1990s. And, you know, on the way, I was born in Kenya. We lived in Kenya in the refugee camp about 3 years. And thankfully, we won the lottery that was provided by UNHCR, and we first landed in Texas, Houston. And that was our first destination, you know, and opportunity for us to escape from the refugee camp. So after living a year in Texas, we then was got provided by a sponsorship from Lutheran Church. So that's how we moved to Minnesota, and we lived in Minnesota for the last 17, 18 years. You know, and I call that home. Growing up in Minnesota, you know, I consider myself as a Minnesotan boy. I graduated from high school, graduated from college. You know, I did track and field over there. And during my junior year in college, everything has changed, you know, how I've seen refugees being portrayed in the media. And for that, I was inspired to start Dream Refugee and Epimonia to change the refugee narrative that was going on. And for me, that was the beginning of my entrepreneurship and my important work supporting refugees here in the U.S.
Your experience as a refugee is not unique, but you, like you said, you consider yourself lucky because many don't have the opportunity to come into this country. Yeah. You also participated in the lottery before Trump was elected,
which
also changed the circumstances of that program. Yeah. And you only experienced 3 years in a camp. Yeah. I think that's important for our audience to know, you know, what the typical experiences for refugees such as you.
So, you know, is you say that it's 3 years right now. I just want to put that out there. It takes, is the average to be in the camp, we usually take 17 years.
Wow.
And unfortunately, we had 3 years back then. And, you know, there were times where my mom told me stories about how she would go out middle of the night, sacrifice, you know, look food, seek shelter for us, and, you know, find food for us, you know. Obviously, I was a toddler back then, so I don't vividly remember living in the camp, but there were times I remember screams, you know, of babies during the camps. You know, it was a scary thing, you know, for me to experience that as a young kid. So,
and I think it's also important to point out that there are about 250 million people throughout the world who live outside their home country. 10% are refugees escaping war and persecution and factors that are beyond their control. We're talking about millions of people. Sometimes people don't realize the extent of this problem.
Yes. And for that, you know, causation is based on, you know, war, climate, you know, prosecution. And for us, it was civil war, you know, that's how we fled from Somalia. And unfortunately, it's growing. Now there's over 70 million refugees are currently displaced around the world. You know, a couple of years ago, it was 60 million. So it's increasing and we need to do something about it.
Definitely. So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about specifically because of your history as a Somali refugee is that sometimes people make statements regarding bringing children into the process of refugee resettlement. So when they talk about Central American refugees, they talk disparagingly about how can parents put a baby or a child at risk. In your case, you were, what, 4 years old? So how is it that a parent can put a child at risk in the process of leaving their country? Could you explain to us why is it that parents would put a child at risk, jump into the Mediterranean or walk thousands of miles from Honduras to the United States?
You know, end of the day, it's for their future. That's the reason why they want to look out for their kids, you know, and their future. It's either they die in the camp or they die in the war or else go out and flee to that country. You know, there's not an option to it. So people don't understand that they don't want to flee. It's a mandatory, you know, because or else they'll die in the situation they're at currently. And, you know, so
it's the concept of being a choice.
Yeah.
You know, we as Americans sometimes believe that everything we do is a function of choice.
Absolutely.
When in reality, refugees don't choose to leave literally their country. Yeah. They are refugees for a reason.
Indeed.
And in this case, you know, running away from war. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about is the new political environment that is banning travel from a number of countries.
Yep.
One of them includes Somalia.
That's correct.
And this is the executive order 13780, it has a number. And this proclamation is restricting travel from Chad, North Korea, Venezuela, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. The idea behind this executive order is that this makes us safer.
Yes.
And as a Somali refugee, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about this ban? And now that you are an American, do you feel safer as a result of that?
I don't feel safer at all. It's actually causing the problem even more worse, you know. And for that, like, you know, when you ban these countries, you're banning the future of the United States. You're just banning their future, you know, that they can contribute in the U.S. People don't look at it that way, you know. And for that, it's unfortunate to see that kind of situation. And hopefully, you know, that could be unbanned soon.
So you see it as a liability for the United States.
Indeed.
As opposed to a liability for the countries of origin.
That's correct. You know, like I said, you know, when a refugee comes to a new country, these people have tremendous skills, talent. Immigrants and refugees build, you know, the United States, you know, and they are the future of this country particularly. And for that, I see this an opportunity that if you're banning these people, you're just banning the future of these future leaders. So
you also spoke during your lecture here at Brown that you experienced the reality of life in America as if there was an expectation in your mind that this life was going to be different.
Indeed.
Even though you're very successful, you still had different expectations to the reality of what you encountered.
Yes. You know, when I arrived in the U.S., me and my parents, you know, one of my parents told me, There were times she thought she was living a good life, you know. Oh, America would be the land of opportunity where you fulfill your dreams. But that was not the case, you know. My mom and my dad, you know, worked very hard to provide for us, you know. There were times where, you know, my dad usually worked about 12 hours a day, you know. And there were times my mom wouldn't see my dad during the day. So it was tough, but you know, it was for them that helped me grow in a person which I am today. And you know, for that reason, I'm hugely fortunate enough to, you know, to see those things flourish. So
you also used sports as a way of getting out of poverty, as a way of obtaining an education. Somebody somehow had told you that you were, you know, talented, that
that's
this
right.
is an opportunity. Tell us the story.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, I went to an all affluent white high school, you know, and coming from the cities, it was tough, you know, when I was attending that high school, because there was not a lot of people that looked like me. You know, I faced a lot of isolation. You know, it was a lot of times where I didn't fit in. But thankfully, sport was one of the elements that helped me integrate into the culture, you know, helped me bond more. And for that, I did track and field. And on top of that, you know, I was good at it, you know, at a point where that helped me pursue my collegiate athletics. And it's been a great, you know, opportunity for me. So huge sport has been a huge role in my life.
And it helped you get into college.
Yes, indeed.
Which, you know, a lot of people don't have the opportunity to have, given the cost of college
indeed.
In the United States.
So
most people would have gone to college, would have obtained the degree and start making money.
That's
and
right.
Taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you decided to, you know, join a cause, the cause of refugees all over the world. Tell us of that moment when you decided that this was going to be what you were going to dedicate your life.
Yes, the funny part was when I was going to college, my initial goal was to, you know, graduate, get a 4-year degree and work. You know, that was the initial
plan.
Like everybody else, you know. But there was a time that changed, you know, that didn't happen. You know, during my junior year in college, and when the current president came to Minnesota, specifically in St. Cloud, he backlashed the whole refugees community. You know, there, he was making statements like Somalis are terrorists, you know, with a lot of negative rhetorics. And for me, that just changed and inspired me to start this project called Dream Refugees, basically to essentially change the refugee narrative. We don't hear a lot of stories in the media, especially success stories of refugees, you know. And for me, that was the beginning of my journey, of my entrepreneurship journey, and making and creating awareness of the refugee crisis and change these stories of how refugees are portrayed in the media. And yeah, since then it's been great, you know. One of our products we have right now is we create clothing line that we refugee life jackets and we turn into bracelets. That's our main accessory product line. And we hire refugees and we provide opportunities for refugees.
It's important for people to understand the context of where this is happening, because people don't think of Minnesota as a place for
right.
Somali refugees.
Indeed.
When in reality it is the largest
second largest
Somali population in the United States, where you grew up. So this was personal for you.
It was very personal to me, you know, and for that, someone who's literally backlashing Somali refugees, you know, that just hit me hard. And I thought about my parents, you know, for the fact that they worked extremely hard to help me provide, you know, help me excel in life. And for that, you know, it was time for me to change the narrative. So.
And the people that you were living with,
literally,
you know, your friends, the people you knew in the Somali community, you knew these people were not criminals.
Exactly.
You knew these people were all working very, very hard.
Like your typical, you know, American, you know, they're paying their taxes, they're providing for their kids, your regular, you know, people. But you know, backlashing them, it was not right, you know.
So the first project was this Refugee Dream?
Dream Refugee.
Dream Refugee.
That's
that was
right.
the name of the of the group. What did you do there?
So what I did was, you know, I've captured over 30 refugee stories around the community in Minnesota. You know, I had a photographer, a friend of mine, you know, I had a journalist who jumped on board, helped me write these stories. And for me, I was literally going out in the community and interviewing these refugees people, you know, telling about how they came to America and how they contribute to America, you know, whether it's culturally, diversity, or financially, you know. We don't hear those success stories. And for that, it was the beginning of refugees changing the narrative, you know.
So changing the narrative for you was important as a result of
indeed.
What the president was trying to portray
in
the media,
especially
in that.
I had to combat that, you know, and for me, that was my beginning to combat that.
So after you create Dream Refugee, all of a sudden somebody put an idea in your head. How did this come about to build this bracelet out of life jackets?
Yes, so during my senior year at college at the University of St. Thomas, I participated in this business competition called the Fowler, you know. And for me, it was how can I build a social enterprise company that impacts refugees, that provides job employment, at the same time create awareness of the refugee crisis. And for that, that was the beginning of Epimonia, where I've seen all these life jackets literally littered in the shore of Greece. And I was like, how could I take this life jacket and turn it into a product line? And for that, bracelets was one of those products, you know, and it's been a great response. You know, I've contacted many, many refugees organizations in Greece to supply the life jacket for me. At the same time, we do support refugees organization in Greece as well. So
in essence, you took garbage.
Yeah, literally.
You took garbage and turned it into a social enterprise that is now helping refugees. Yeah. How does Epimonia help refugees?
So how Epimonia helps refugees is our product is produced by refugees in Minnesota. And then once we sell those products, 50% of profits are supporting refugees organization across the U.S., which focus on providing scholarship for high school students, job employment, and helping refugees pay for their citizenship application fee. So those are three categories that we're focusing on right now. And that's how Epimonia support refugees and create awareness of the refugee crisis using fashion.
I wanted to ask you, what does Epimonia mean?
Yeah. Epimonia means, it's a Greek word meaning perseverance. The reason, you know, when a refugee flees from their home country, they persevere so much during the journey. And Greece is the main hub for refugees right now where they're fleeing to. And it has a connection, a deep-rooted connection. So that's why the meaning of Epimonia comes from.
This is a for-profit company as
that's
opposed
right.
to a non-profit, which many people would have thought that's what you were trying to accomplish.
Yep.
Why make it a for-profit instead of a non-profit company?
I firmly believe that private companies, you know, has the ability to scale really fast and make impact really, you know. And for that, there is a reason why I've created a for-profit company where I can hire refugees, support refugees and make that impact. You know, I feel like private sector companies needs to step up and needs to play a role in the refugee crisis because they are the ones that who can make a huge impact rapidly.
Tell me about the people that make the bracelets, because you say that these are made by refugees. Could you share some of the stories of these refugees that that work for you in Minnesota?
Yeah, so we currently employ Hmong refugees. They create our bracelets. Hopefully, once Epimonia grows, you know, we're thinking about hiring more refugees from different backgrounds, like Somali refugees, Syrian refugees. But for right now, we have Hmong refugees. And these former Hmong refugees, they have similar stories like me. You know, they fled from Vietnam and wanted a better life for their children. And for that, the refugee crisis is, even though there's so many people around the world that are different, but at the same time, the commonality, they have the same challenge and the same goal, you know, to eventually have a better life for their kids.
How did you come about having Hmong refugees as opposed to Somali refugees,
right,
which is what people would have expected?
Indeed. So as I was looking for people to partner up with, you know, one of my friend recommended me to reach out to a Hmong manufacturer in Maplewood, Minnesota. And that's how I got connected with the Hmong refugees, you know, in particular. And for that, it was a great start for me to help my company grow and just start creating bracelets.
And who are the organizations that benefit from the sale of these bracelets? Who are the nonprofit organizations that are now working with refugees receiving your 50% of your profits?
That's right. So we work with the International Institute of Minnesota. We help them help refugees pay for their citizenship application. We also partner with USA UNHCR. That's another big partnership. And also as well as the Karen nonprofit, we provide scholarship for them. So the interesting aspect is each bracelet supports a different initiative. You know, the red one supports citizenship, the blue one provides scholarship, and the orange bracelet supports job training.
So does that mean I have to get three bracelets instead of just one like I have right now?
I mean, the larger the impact, why not?
So that's it. That's my next purchase, have the complete collection. And you are not only making bracelets, there's other clothing accessories that you are developing with the same concept of involving the refugees themselves in building them and utilizing the materials from the from the Greek shores.
Yes, so we have other products such as beanies that's made out of a recycled life jacket. The patch is made out of the life jacket. We have tote bags. We have apparel line, Just in the future, once we create these products, our symbolic is using the life jacket strip. That is how it differentiate our company from other brands, using those life jackets. And so those life jackets is very symbolic of the refugee crisis. It means a lot.
It's more than symbolic, and I am a witness to that. I purchased my my bracelet in December, and I have to tell you, every time I find myself in a situation where I feel that the world is not being nice to me, all I got to do is just hold on to my bracelet and think of the person that was floating in the Mediterranean and thinking of the hardship that that person had to experience in order to get to wherever they got and think, my life is just it may be inconvenient a little bit, but nothing compared to the life that these refugees have to experience.
No, I mean, no matter where you're from, it has that personal connection, It shows, no matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, there's hope. Keep pushing, For me, it's like that personal connection. I'm thinking about you at the moment.
As you were trying to develop this idea of Epimonia, who were your advocates? Who were supporting you in this idea? Because I'm sure you didn't do this alone. And who were your detractors? What were people telling you about your ability to be able to carry out this mission? By the way, people don't even know this, but you are 23 years old.
Indeed. Yeah, I get that a lot. But, there was a lot of key players that helped me grow Epimonia. One of them were my mentors, one of them was the school, the University of St. Thomas. And for that, these were the people who helped me contribute and helped me invest my time in this company, and without them, I wouldn't be here. So obviously you have to have a great resource. You have to have a great team members, in order for your company to grow. So those were the people who helped me and helped me dream big.
And who were your detractors? Who were saying that, don't waste your time, go get a job?
That's right. Those were people like family members, unfortunately, because at the same time, they're looking out for you. They're saying, don't waste your time, go get it. You graduated from college, you have a great degree, now go work. I can get a job, that's easy for me, but I want something challenging, So when you discover your passion, you got to keep at it and keep going, because the less resistant it is, the long term is the most rewarding, and that means the more impact.
In spite of what family member would say. Yep. And I think that's a good advice to college students that right now find themselves in a situation where they would want to change the world.
That's right.
But the realities kind of inhibit that, that sense of purpose.
Yes, and unfortunately, you will have those people, and at the same time, they're looking out for you, but you need to know that in order for you to find yourself, you have to get out of your comfort zone. You have to find new things. You have to try new things. You have to, go out, meet different people that look like you. It's just something that's about you that you can bring talent to the world, And for that, just take that risk and it will pay off.
What does the future hold for Epimonia? Are you expected to grow into other lines of business? Do you plan to go global and have a global impact in the lives of refugees?
Yes, man. Those are all in the radar right now. But since we are still a startup company, first, we need to grow our company by hiring more refugees. Right now, I want to focus in the U.S. because that's the most important aspect right now. But once things picks up 5 to 10 years from now, we don't know. We might go global brand, but right now is to impact refugees in the U.S. particular, you know, as just make as much impact as I can.
Well, the beautiful part about the internet is that anybody in the world can see your website and support it. So I'm sure you're getting requests from people all over the world to get these bracelets.
I've been getting a lot of purchases from countries like Australia, New Zealand, London. It's a huge honor and an amazing thing to see people from different around the country support your cause, you know, even though you're based in the U.S.
Well, it gives us great hope for the future that people like you are working on behalf of refugees worldwide through entrepreneurship, which is a different way of supporting this important cause.
Absolutely, indeed.
If anybody is interested in finding more information about your company, where can they find you?
They can find me at pomonia.com, and they can also follow our social media platform on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at @pomoniamn. And it's a great way to spread awareness, and it's a great way to join the movement of our company.
And during your lecture at Brown, you were asking for college students to get involved as well.
Yep. I emphasize that college students can play a role in the refugee crisis in any way. I recommend them, you know, to volunteer at their local refugee community, you know, meet these refugees, arrivals, and just learn their story, you know, be very open. The impact you're making to them in their eyes is a large impact. It's an impact of a lifetime to the refugees, you know. So I believe, you know, college students are the future. And for that, I emphasize, just go out there and meet a stranger.
And hopefully we'll have many more Mohammed Malins graduating from college changing the world.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Mohammed, in Trending Globally.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
This episode was produced by Dan Richards, Babette Thomas, and Jackson Cantrell. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. Additional music by the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Sarah Baldwin. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps others find the show. We'll be bringing you more episodes soon on the coronavirus pandemic as it unfolds, from our community of experts at Watson and Brown. For more information about Trending Globally and Watson's other podcasts, go to watson.brown.edu. Thanks for listening, and tune in soon for another episode of Trending Globally.